a study for the Benedictine Order of the Priesthood, and is both an ordained non-denominational minister and, as Swami Nityananda, an initiated Swami in the Saraswati Order of Yogi. It's my pleasure tonight to bring to you Swami Nityananda.
Thank you, Bob. Don? Well, time. For your information, Bob means father in Sanskrit. It's a very, most people don't know that, you see. It's not B-O-B, B-A-B. And G means Reverend Father, Babaji. So, normally we always refer to the male as Bob. Eastern countries will be referred. Those who attended last night, we spoke about the origin and the involvement of man in his consciousness. Tonight, we're going to bring him to the point of emergence and where he is right now and what he's supposed to be doing with his consciousness. Our consciousness is at a point where we are striving to finally realize ourselves. And most of us are asking those type of questions in our minds. What are we really doing? We go to work, we use our minds, we rationalize, we try to control our environment. And then we look forward to a happy, peaceful retirement. If we could get it. Some of us, the dreams are there, and then all of a sudden the dreams are pulled out from under us. And then the happy retirement is gone. And for others, they may chuck in the towel and say, well, life is too hard to bear. Might as well lay down and die. And that's where the consciousness is finally tapering off. It's trying to learn from past mistakes and holds no other inspiration to exist. After a while, the consciousness suddenly shuts off, and really, have we used it? Have we discovered it? Have we realized it? Have we actually tapped what is really possible for the consciousness? All the scriptures tell us what is possible for the consciousness, but they don't come out in a literal way to help us to understand it, simply because the term mystic is a very peculiar term. When I was a boy trying to study to become a Benedictine monk, I asked a very foolish question to my mentor. I said, how can we talk about the life of Jesus and we don't do the works of Jesus? And he said, young man, you'll never be a priest. You're a mystic. That was the first time I heard the word mystic. Now, I never became a priest. But it took me a long time to find out what a mystic is. And I don't want to tell you it's an easy journey. The journey of the mystic is an inward journey. It's a journey in which you emerge out of your cocoon, of your ego. If we think of a butterfly and try to analyze its makeup, we will find that a butterfly originally started out as a caterpillar. But when you saw the caterpillar, you could never think that that caterpillar will ever be a butterfly. I could put myself in this place of the caterpillar when I started to be involved with religion years ago. And as that caterpillar, I wormed my way along on the ground. That means trying to rationalize for my existence, using my five senses to make the outward environment fit. And when I couldn't rationalize it sufficiently because of too many injustices, I came to a deadlock, realizing that every night the deadlock occurred within me. And that's the time when I went to sleep. And when I went to sleep, I had to tell myself I gotta wake up again for the next morning. Now, if I didn't tell myself to wake up, I don't know if I'll ever wake up. In those days, I was not really convinced that life existed after man passed away. I had no real way to prove it. It took many years to find out if there is actually life when man passed away. And studying the caterpillar, we see the caterpillar comes to a deadlock too. It doesn't know what will happen to it when it passes away. But in a strange way, the caterpillar spins a cocoon around its own self and shuts down. The caterpillar does it willingly and knowingly. Equally true, in my own self, the shutting down process had to start someplace. Sleep is one way. But when you're asleep, you're unconscious. You may dream, but you have no proof that the dreams are real, that they're really actually transforming you. They may give you some indication as to how you're behaving outwardly. They may tell you that you've misfiled a lot of nonsensical data in your brain, and you could jump to a lot of crazy conclusions as to why your environment behaves a certain way or why you're reacting a certain way. But that's no evidence that it's really doing something for you in transforming you and giving you the reality of your nature. When we go back to the caterpillar, we find that the caterpillar is not dreaming when it shuts down. The caterpillar is actually going through a phase of transformation, a form of death. And when it comes out of that cocoon, it doesn't come out looking a better caterpillar. In a strange way, it comes out a different creature. Prior to that period, the caterpillar cannot fly and looks pretty ugly because it has one color. Sometimes they're gray or brown or green. And normally, if you kill one, they'll rot and decompose. Ants may eat them. Vermin, termites will eat them up, or bugs will eat them up, birds may eat them up. But as soon as it goes through that change, internally, when it shuts down, and emerges as a different creature, There is definitely a law working in that caterpillar's mechanism. It's emerging. Emerging into a different level of awareness. It can fly, and you call it what? A butterfly or a moth? Yeah, there's nothing that flies. Of all the creatures that fly, there is nothing more beautiful, more geometrically laid out than that butterfly. And you have never seen a rotten butterfly. When they go into their phase of shutting down, their bodies never decompose. Here we have, for the first time, God's laws pertaining to cell life, the mystic life, the true mystic life of man, the true soul life locked up in the cellular form. As we said last night, scientifically, when we analyze John's first verse, he says, in the beginning was the Word. That means the vibratory conscious energy, or sonics, which this whole universe is all about. And even a dark hole of space that blocks out light cannot prevent sonic waves from passing through, which is sound waves. And the Word was with God. That means the Word is existing in consciousness already. We are aware of it. We can be attuned to it. It's existing. We can't shut it out. Therefore, it's there. And the Word was God. Literally was God. That sonic principle is God. Life itself. Holding this whole universe up. And the Word was made flesh. That vibratory principle has become cell life. From atomic nature right down to cell life. And when you look around at the different types of cell life or flesh life, we have man, we have animal. Then John says, God dwelt, or the Word dwelt in man. The vibratory principle selected of all the cell lives, or type of cell lives, to beam in or lock itself into permanently, and that is the one called man. That doesn't say it is not carrying on its laws of creation on all the other forms around it as a reminder. Man is going to learn that from his environment. He learns from his environment. More so, he learns from inside. The butterfly is that particular principle of emergence, in where we see a definite transformation that occurs when we learn to shut down inside of ourselves. When we go to the life of Jesus, we see such a principle at work. Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he looked into his own consciousness. And within his own consciousness, he saw his own death. It's like a form of dreaming. Some people dream of their death. But most people who dream of it usually fall asleep and then they'll wake up telling, I dreamt how I'll die. But to literally sit down or kneel down or in any position and close the eyes and slow the brain down and observe within the structure how one's death occurs from the environment, this is not impossible. It's within the range of every human being. But in the case of Jesus, he did it in the garden with his disciples. and he observed inside. And he was making the decision between the ego and his own intuitive nature, or Christ nature. Father, remove this cup. That means divine principle of life. Free this mechanism from this experience of dying on a cross in such a horrible way. The pain alone would be fantastic for the brain to rationalize, or the body to experience. Why should I die such a horrible way? What have I done? And yet possessing all the power of visualization and the ability to marshal the energy from his own brain. And this is an interesting phenomenon. In the East, it is said that the human brain is the only mechanism designed to trigger atomic energy by thinking. Now think of that. Before we go any further, try analyzing Jesus in the Garden of Eden, or in the Garden of Gethsemane. The human brain is the only organism designed to trigger atomic energy by thinking. Imagine how we're selling ourselves short. He could trigger the atomic energy within his own mechanism, because he did it before he came to the Garden of Gethsemane. Many times he triggered it through his brain to satisfy the feedback patterns of his disciples, or people who were in need, or the karmic patterns, their mistake patterns. He could trigger it. Uri Geller does it. And people see Uri Geller theory, and they do it too. Little kids do it. They bend objects. So we know that if he wanted, on his own ego drive, he could stop the encounter of dying on the cross. But his higher self tells him that this is already set up as a part of the cellular life, no matter how hard it appears. Don't interfere with it. Go through it and see if the real creative principle, which we call the Father, does not have a purpose behind his creation. Why we must encounter these different difficulties in our lives. There is a value, and there is a elevation, and there is a transmutation. There is an emergence. Something that we emerge out of, never to return back to. It's a different consciousness altogether. Not the earthly consciousness. It's the true mystic consciousness. So he said, not my will, not my conscious ego makeup. Not within this mechanism, from the mind's level, but by thy will, but thy will be done. The creative will, the creative drive for transformation of the cellular form. So, this is the surrender of the ego will, the ego consciousness, to the mystic consciousness. But he doesn't know yet, until he comes out from that shutdown principle. He's still got to live it. It's all good and fine, some of us can dream. I'll be lifted up, open my eyes, I don't know yet. We all can imagine, but out there, the soldier is still waiting, and the nails are waiting, and the hammers are waiting. And the journey is waiting. You still got to walk that gangplank, they say. And that is exactly where the final experience comes, between the consciousness that is centered on rational thinking and the consciousness that centers on the mystical experience. Here your scientific data and mechanical makeup can't help you no more. The environment is no asset no more. Either you trust in a non-seen principle and you know it's unseen because it said the Son declares the Father. It didn't say the Son has seen the Father. The Son declares the Father. And the Son says, I and the Father are one. You see me, you see the Father. That's the trust you gotta have now, because the Son isn't saying he's seeing anything. There's no guarantee that you say when you enter the mystic consciousness, you did see somebody sitting beaming at you and said, ha boy, I'm glad you found me. No such view, you know. But you're gonna change so drastically that there is no doubt in your mind anymore that there is a power that has lifted you from one level to the next. You've emerged. But you still gotta live through it yet. There are a lot of things that you must go through to indicate there is a transmutation occurring in the cellular makeup. It's like the oil being squeezed out of the seed or a nut of a fruit. You don't see the oil when you take the nut and look at it. You suspect there is oil there. And you have to pulverize the fruit and pulverize the stone and everything till you have nothing to show, and then a little oil will come out. See? But that's more precious, and that's more expensive, more valuable. Equally true in the tissues. Jesus finally comes out of the garden, knowing fully well he has to walk that last mile, or what you call it, the journey to the end. It's a different journey than a man who is confined to be executed at 12 o'clock tonight. No. He's walking and people are crying. Then he says to them, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. My ego mind is no longer centered on this cellular mass. My internal experiences of surrendering to this internal truth is my freedom. I overcome it. I know from the mystic consciousness now there is a great change occurring. I have to live out the experience now. To have that occur in the body. So he's not teaching us reincarnation. Most people have the concept or belief that Eastern people are teaching reincarnation, and that's all they want to talk about. Very erroneous concept. But Jesus was an Oriental, born in the Middle East. It would be highly impossible for him not to be exposed to the concept of reincarnation, because reincarnation antedated his birth. But he didn't come to tear down reincarnation or to point it out as the ideal of life. He came to show that there was something greater than reincarnation. Reincarnation would only imply that a person has failed to do something and they have to do it all over again. Basically, that is all it implies. If you go to school, would your teacher put you in the next classroom? What do they do? They put you back. To do what? To do it over again. And until you do it over sufficiently enough till you pass it anymore, right? And when you don't do it anymore, it's over. Equally true, cell life. The caterpillar and the butterfly. And the caterpillar ceases to be acting like a caterpillar and then takes on the reality of becoming a butterfly. It's free. Equally true here in this body, this cell body. When we cease to let the ego guide us in our consciousness and determine through the five senses our behavior, then we would transcend, emerge. We would resurrect. It's not an easy journey. Yet, every time you're in the body, that's the opportunity. It can be done when you're dead. No dead man resurrects if you didn't mess with while you're alive. See, you have to mess with when you're in the body. Then you can resurrect. You have to go through that art. You have to go through that process. You have to be conscious of the fact that in the body to make the change. It is not something that is given to us because we are good. It is something that we earn. To him that overcometh, and this is a challenge, and this is a responsibility, and this is a great deal of personal work. In the Eastern country we call it the sadhana. The disciplines that molds the soul while working through the human form to raise it to the level of divine sonship. That's the sadhana. It's called ethical living. To him that overcometh, overcome what? Death, the breakdown of the tissues. I will not send forth a second time. Let him experience a second death. But I will make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. Now a pillar, you look at it. See that the pillar? In this structure, if you pull it out from under that walkway, what would happen to this building? Collapse. So a pillar is a reliable structure, right? It's something that is there to stand out. It has achieved its position to maintain the structure of the pillar. Equally true, when the body is transmuted by the soul principle, in the life we live consciously and rise above this principle called death, then we are free. We don't go forth no more. We are truly like this, part of the creation. Why he says to him that overcometh, I'll not send forth a second time involving death? Because he says death is our last enemy. It's not our first enemy, it's our last enemy. Now you know what an enemy is. Who do you call enemy? It's very specific when he said death is your last enemy. What is an enemy? Somebody who wants to take your life or challenge you, right? But more so, your enemy always wants to hurt you or kill you in some form, deprive you of your well-being. And death is that last. Then we have to master it. We have to master our enemies. And he gives us a way how to master our enemies. How should we master our enemies? Right. We should love our enemies. Then what, if our last enemy is death, what must we do now to master death? Love death. We must learn how to die consciously. You can't really die and master it if you're unconscious, if you hate it, if you fear it, because you never know where you're going. And every time you hate it and fear it, you'll run from inside of yourself and shut down and pull the lids over your head. And the spiritual man never dies that way. Every spiritual man who are mystic, conscious-minded individual, who has acquired a mystic consciousness, leaves this body fully conscious up to the last minute when he leaves. He's fully conscious in the mystic consciousness that there is no death. It's all birthing. There never was a death and never will be a death to the mystic consciousness. But there will always be birthing. The eternal birthing, the eternal nowness. It's only then you know for sure that you are immortal. Until that time, you are guessing. You're imagining. You see? The soul is immortal, was never born, will never die. But it goes through the process of birthing in forms to please the Creator, who is the eternal life itself. He alone can grant many things to that form. And that's what we call the grace. The Father can grant to the body non-decay. When this body has thrown off corruption and taken on non-corruption, this body can suddenly stay after death in a non-decaying state. That's one of the graces. Or he could, if he wants, let you take the body with you and don't leave no body. You see, and then the body is gone. And everybody will wonder somebody stole the dead man's body. Or he could pull off what we call Star Trek on us. You beam down, beam out. You know, one moment you're here, one moment you dematerialize yourself. That's all within the will of the Lord. However, he wants to satisfy the transmutation of that law. He does it to us. There's a lot of evidence of this among us, that we know that man is moving scientifically, philosophically, mystically to this end. Emergence into spirit by conscious awareness and conscious application of the mind over the atomic energy. When he was given the power to go out and have dominion over the universe, this was a tremendous gift, but not to own it. We can't own it. We can only have the right to run it or take care of it. And if we overcome the pull of the five senses in which we find ourselves trapped in, and achieve the mystic consciousness, we are emerging. Now, emergence has a lot of problems in it, and at the same time, it has lots of benefits in it. Because if a person has emerged, you wouldn't know if they have emerged. And since it's one of those unusual phenomena in life. It makes us tend to be leery of the person next to us.
Trees, they look like me, all colors. Dogs, they all look the same. My face is imposing that. Horses, people, all kind of nature out of my face is in. Now, I said, well, this is death. This is beautiful. Well, I'd like to stay here. Then all of a sudden, a voice says, no. You have to go back into the body. Your work is not finished. You can't argue with the mystic consciousness. Mystic consciousness tells you right away, you have to go back in, and you try to stay out, see what happens. You learn pretty fast that God's will is never broken. You obey, or you're put into that particular situation where you realize there's nothing better than to obey. It becomes easier for you to obey from that level. In a physical way, it seems sometimes you offer a lot of mental resistance with your ego. But at that level, you feel it's okay. You know it's okay to go back into the body. Well, I went back into the body. The body felt strange to me. I tried to get up. The hand would not take the weight. The foot wouldn't take the weight. In the meantime, my friend was coming down from 30 feet. All this has gone on. He hadn't come downstairs yet. You can imagine how long, it seems like eternity of in and out of this universe in my soul. And to say that I see Jesus and all the great ones, they're all there, but they're not doing a single thing. They're not bothering to interfere. Because why should they interfere? They can't chew the food for you. You have to live through the experience. You know one thing is, they have done it. And they long for you to do it. They long for you to masticate that bread and swallow it and gain strength. They long for you to go through the process. So do not interfere. That's why they're your brother's keeper. You begin to appreciate their life as the example. That they place their life on that scaffold of truth to make it worthwhile accepting it. So here I am. My friend comes down and I said to him, I think I've broken something, I can't move. He said, okay, I'll call the ambulance. And it so happened that he's a lawyer and his brother's a lawyer. And in Canada, it's one of the peculiar phenomena. If you call the ambulance, you have to call the police department. So you better call the police department. The police department brings the ambulance. And there are the two doctors ready. And in the meantime, my whole body has become numb. And I know I'm dying. All up to my face. And something tells me now, inside, if the numbness gets past your eyes, you're dead. So don't let it get past your eyes. I can't feel my foot, I can't feel my hand. Everything is numb. And the numbness is already going here. And this part of the brain is telling me inside, if it gets past the eyes, it's over. So I start thinking now, what should I do to prevent the numbness from going up into the brain? The only thing that comes to my mind is take your hand and put it in your mouth and bite. Have you ever tried to bite when your teeth is on a Novocaine? Mm-hmm. You have no sensation? You don't have no sensation, right? Nope. There it goes, I'm biting. I'm biting and biting until I felt pain. Then I felt the first sensation of pain in the body, the numbness stopped. And it started descending back down. And it descended and stopped right at the heart. Never went any further than that. Never came any higher than that. But I had my finger in my mouth. And I kept biting. And there I'm holding this condition. And the consciousness is saying inside, now you're going to prove all that you learned in the physical body while you're ill. So enjoy. All right. The doctors came, they picked me up, and they, you know, they can't move me because they don't know what position. So I'm on a big blanket, and they just slide me over to make a stretcher, put me in the ambulance, and they're taking me to the hospital. And I'll tell you this, when a siren is blowing, it will kill you faster than anything else when you're in that state. The sound of that siren drove the numbness almost past my eye. I really couldn't bite hard enough to keep it down. Because the sound was so fantastic, what it did to the numbness, this was pushing it back up. But I just kept on biting. In the meantime, one of the doctors was looking, and he seen the bone sticking through the skin. He was really trying to tie it up. I'm not looking. But I said to him, could you stop that siren, man? I'm going to die with that thing blowing. He said, well, we'll tone it down, but you have to keep the people out of the way so you can get to the hospital. All right. Got to the hospital. And this is what you call a comedy now, because her divine consciousness, the mystic consciousness works. I arrived, and then they take you to the emergency ward. Out comes out a nurse, big, old, in a pimp, well-starched uniform, what's your name, where you're born, what, how much money you have, what's wrong with you? In the meantime, my friend is there, and the two doctors are looking, and I look as well, what can I ask for? But they take my finger out of my mouth. Then the numbness will go up into the brain. I can't answer. So the doctor looked at my predicament. He said, nurse, this man is dying. Let us get him to the emergency table. Then he can take all the information after. So they rushed me in. The police got me here. And into the table. And the young fellows, they're working their best to stop the bleeding and pull the bones together. In the meantime, I'm looking. And I can feel now that this consciousness that runs the universe, that is functioning in me as life, is working all the conditions out. The ridiculousness of the nurse and the, all the things are working out success. So I'm lying there in the, on the table and I'm looking at the big white walls in the hospital. Then all of a sudden the elevator door opens and around me there are a lot of young interns working, nurses. And out steps out the doctor, and I could see he's an elderly man. And he looks over, and he says to the man, this man is dying. And so he took away the scalpel from the one man, and he stuck it right up into my ribs, and it's like letting air out like a balloon. And that way, he deflated me. Then he said to me, he said, young man, normally I don't come down this elevator, but it's a strange thing tonight, as soon as I finished, I was going down the regular elevator, it wouldn't work. And this is the only one that is able to come down, and here I am. And I said to myself, yeah, Father, I know how you're working already. This mystic consciousness works in a strange way. Not to fight death, but to try and go through it and see how far this mystic consciousness, or in a way, is. Takes care in minute details of all the nights. You mean to tell me the elevator got to stop at that particular time? The timing is too fantastic, too mathematical for it to happen. And there he was. All right. As soon as that happened, then later on it, when he took the hypodermic, he said, now young man, I'm going to give you an injection. And I wanted to go to sleep. I mean, we have to do some surgery, but I think things should be all right. I said, okay. So he gave me a hypodermic. And in my mind now, I have no concept of the danger and the injury in my body. In the meantime, I'm only living on the illusion from the fall and the impact of the fall that I must have broken a bone or two, and therefore everything will be all right. So I have a business to look after. I have people to take care of, and they depend on me because they like where they work. So I was saying in myself now, before, this is about 10, 12 o'clock at night already, I'm closing my eyes and I start to visualize. It says, well, tomorrow morning I must wake up at 7 o'clock. And I have to be in my business to take care of it. So while he gives me a hypodermic, I know that's going to make me fall asleep. But I must program my mind so I'll wake up. So I'm looking at inside of my head here, you know, I'm seeing a clock, long hand at 12 and short hand at 7. And I keep impressing it. That's 7 o'clock I got to wake up. My own mental alarm clock. Well, after a while, my fingers out of my mouth and I fall asleep. A little while during that whole session, all I can hear in my head, bang, 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 7 o'clock, wake up, bang, 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 bang.